Hello and welcome to Think Rant. I'm John Stabler and today is the 9th of June 2011. Welcome to the show. With me I have two very special guest hosts this week. With me, opposite me, he was chairman of the Cheryl Cole Violent Fiction Fan Club until his resignation last year to take up the post of head researcher on the Penile Enlargement Project at the University of Aberystwyth. It's celebrity stalking member enhancer Stephen Brett.
Woohoo!
I need to insert applause there.
Well, but wasn't my applause enough?
No.
Oh.
And also with us this week, his critically acclaimed sexual health book, Rolling Fat Chicks in Flour, was on the Times bestseller list for 14 weeks. He's a fashion expert and regularly helps out on the makeup on ITV's Loose Women. It's Gok Wan's arch nemesis, Trevor Williams.
Whoop whoop.
Thank you very much. You forgot that I'm also part of the penile reduction program.
So what do you think of the intro?
That's fine, yeah.
You like that?
Yeah, it's all good.
I'm just going to do a different one every week.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Surely it should be Steve's turn next week to get some revenge.
Absolutely. And then obviously you then the week after, Trev.
Excellent.
No, it's my feature. I'm the host, so I get to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but you know, you should be fair and spread the love around.
You can't steal my feature.
We do just character assassinate him throughout the entire show, so we should allow him those nuggets.
I suppose so. I mean, he's probably still smarting from the debate loss as well, to be honest.
what debate loss was this now?
The free will one.
Well, you see,
he's still smarting. See, he's biting straight away there.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad you didn't say the religion debate, because then we know you would have been lying.
That's harsh. I thought that was a draw.
Draw my ass. I haven't met anybody.
I have.
Yeah?
Yeah, I met lots of people.
No, who thought that it was a draw.
And you just asked him to draw your ass? Good Lord, we're finding out so much about you this evening.
Indeed.
We're playing fast and loose because unfortunately we're not going out live this week. Technical difficulties preclude us.
Should've
from...
bought a Mac.
No, it was more to do with the power cut the other night appears to have destroyed.
Yeah, I should have bought Mac.
The comedy just won't stop with you, Steve. That's brilliant.
So we're going to continue anyway. We'll see what happens. Now, guys, this week, there's a big story.
Right.
Obviously, you've seen this. There is quite a few big stories. But the biggest story of the week, obviously, is the fact that Carol Vordman has pipped Pippa Middleton to Rear of the Year.
That's a travesty. That is an absolute travesty. I don't understand how that could possibly happen. Don't get me wrong, Vord has got a good ass, and she's been there before, and she's won it in the past.
But it's in its 30th year.
Yeah, but, you know, what, her ass? No, it's all on that.
No, the competition.
But Pippa's ass is fantastic. We all saw it at the wedding. Best ass I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. Have you got any feelings on this, Trev?
I've been listening to Richard Herring's As It Occurs to Me, or AI Otima, where Pippa Middleton's disembodied anus is a recurring character. So that's all that I think about.
Just the anus?
Yeah, it's not really the anus, it's more the buttocks, you know, and the
full
package,
jealous.
Really. Yeah?
The anus is very, very jealous of the fame that the buttocks are getting, and so breaks out on its own.
Right, okay.
Because I'm just wondering, how would you judge an anus of the year?
I really, really wouldn't go down that route, John, to be honest with you.
You'd have to go in depth.
Really?
And that really isn't... That's not something that would be in the papers, would it? Well, there'd be paper involved.
No.
Already, how many minutes are we in?
it's
but we can blame Richard Herring for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, yeah, but that was the only joke story I have, because...
Well, that's not a joke story, that's a genuine travesty of the news. You know, that's right
well,
up there.
Sorry, lighthearted, you know. And as I said, we don't normally do popular culture. But when I saw that, I was shocked.
Yeah, me too. But well done to Vorders, because, you know, it shows that getting old doesn't really stand in your way.
Okay. We actually have a scientific test this week as well.
What, for arses?
No. This is slightly scientific. There was complaints last week that apparently... One of the hosts of this podcast is losing in a competition because obviously the longer the podcast goes on, the worse his blood sugar goes.
Right.
So, although he won last week by default,
but he didn't actually ask him any questions.
But there was no point, was there?
Of course, it was. It would have been a challenge.
Okay. Anyway, So we're going to do the comp. We're going to do
like
it.
Olympic fencing competition. What am I going to do if the other guy doesn't turn up?
You know? Stand there and do some sort of, like, I don't know, kata type things, you know?
We don't have a kata in fencing.
No, but you can show off some of the moves, you know? Parry cart and all that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah,
a couple of faces.
I was doing
and,
all that
you know,
while the
do all that.
Podcast was going on.
Put a letter Z in the woodwork.
Precisely, you see. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, so he won anyway, but he complained, saying that maybe the reason he lost was because we always do it halfway through the podcast. So I said, why don't we try at the beginning? And I know it's only one data point, so maybe it's not conclusive. But if he wins, this...
But if he wins today, can I then use the argument that I've had two interviews in 2 days and I've driven 500 miles? And I'm knackered. So can I not use that as an argument?
Have you sent a letter from America as well? So, are we ready to play Guess the Year?
This gladiator's ready.
Contestant ready. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, just quick reminder of the rules. I'm going to read out some clues.
Mm-hmm.
You get to guess a year. If you guess wrong, you're locked out for the next clue.
Mm-hmm.
First person who gets the year wins a point and a pint.
Woo!
The score is 4-1 to Steve. Are you ready? Here we go.
I'm going to get very drunk
one
night.
There's beer involved and I'm not winning. How can that be my life?
May the 1st, the Coca-Cola company introduces its first diet drink, Tab Cola. August the 18th, American Civil Rights Movement. James Meredith becomes the first black person to graduate from the University of Mississippi.
Steve,
1961.
Oh. Ooh, you both came in with
answers,
and both of them are wrong. So,
right.
You can't both be locked out, so we'll carry on. November the 18th, the Dartford Tunnel opens in the UK. May the 8th, Dr. No, the first James Bond film, is shown in
Trev,
US.
1961.
I'm sorry, no, you're wrong.
Steve, 1964.
Nope, I'm sorry, you're wrong as well. I'll continue. January the 29th, French President Charles de Gaulle...
Steve, 1963.
Oh, he's right. He's in by process of elimination.
Good grief.
Ah, look at that. I mean, he just... It's amazing. It's like one of those countdown people that have been on for 7 episodes.
I found my calling in life. I have my uses.
It's a shame there's no actual money in this or some professional competition.
Well, you know, it's all about pride.
Okay. So what you're saying, you've got some and Trev's got none.
Well, Trev's got one.
I've got one pride, and that was because you didn't turn up. One measure of pride.
Pretty much.
Just because you weren't there. Excellent.
So now I've done quite a few bits. I'm going to leave it up to Trevor now to do something.
I like how he didn't come to me.
Now that I've done all my, you started to say.
No, not, well, I was going to say all,
yeah,
no, but I do.
Fair enough.
I do have news stories. But you can.
Would you be shocked if I said I didn't, Trev?
I don't believe that for a second.
Shocked
and appalled. I'm sure you've got lots of stuff that you're probably typing up on Google right now and you'll find something.
Yeah, he's just pulled out his dick pad, and he's just unzipping onto it now.
Jealousy, Jonathan.
Are you going to do your Catholic story now, or are you going to wait a little bit?
You can't say that without playing the jingle, can you?
Well, I can't let you know.
The jingle is, has Trev got a Catholic story this week? So, you know, and then he could just say no, and that would be the end of it.
Or he could say, well, I don't want to do it now, I want to do it after.
Terrible.
So what is it? And I might edit this out so it sounds cool.
Yeah, I want to do it later, and then later when you play it, I just say no. And then
okay.
You'll say, but hang on, you said earlier.
That's fine. I don't mind a bit of dishonesty if it's for comedy.
Go ahead, jingle me up, man. I've got something.
Here we go.
Has Trev got a Catholic story this week?
Yes, I have.
Yay!
You lucky people. Okay, now this one is Sister Elizabeth A. Johnson released a book in 2007 that recently it came under harsh criticism from the U.S. Bishops' Committee on Doctrine. Restating concerns that her work was thoroughly misunderstood and consistently misrepresented by the committee, she complained. This is a 2007 book. They just spent a year analysing it, and nobody asked her about it. They didn't ask her what she meant. They just examined it because it was being used in some schools in America, teaching theology. And they've had a go at all sorts of things. Misrepresentations, ambiguities and errors related to the Catholic faith, they said. In response, this is the bizarre thing, this is what made it a story for me. Sister Elizabeth said about their treatment of her book, "Ideas are taken out of context and twisted to mean what they patently do not mean. Sentences are run to a conclusion far from what I think or the text says. False dilemmas are composed. Numerous omissions, distortions, and outright misstatements of fact riddle the reading." This is a Catholic in a book about Catholicism. And she's surprised that the Catholic Church have taken some of ideas out of context and have made decisions about it different from what she actually meant. The people who invented all sorts of bizarre stuff out of whole cloth
about what, you mean, Trev.
What God said, apparently.
Every sperm is sacred and that, yeah.
Yeah, the Wandering Jew, as we've mentioned before, completely invented. And the Immaculate Conception. Another thing, completely invented.
What, you mean it's not true? But,
well,
no, it just
it
wasn't as clean as it sounds. It's probably quite messy. I didn't hear this story. It's quite interesting. But it just seems to me that lately the Catholic Church, after their serious rimming over the child abuse scandal, they seem to be looking for newer and more inventive ways to be offended at things that people say, even so much now, by the sounds of it, that they're willing to be offended at something that someone within the church has written.
Yeah, and they spent a year doing it. It's as though they were so annoyed at being called child molesters and perverts and rapists that they said, "Ah, oh, yeah, but look, there's this book, and it doesn't get Catholicism quite right." And nobody said to them, "You know, it's a nun wrote it, right?"
And so does that mean that maybe in a year's time they're going to, like, you know, launch an attack on us for, you know, our constant bashing of,
you know,
Catholic
what
Church?
Sometimes
they'd be pretty
I
justified.
Wish sometimes I wish that I had actually been in the Catholic Church so they could excommunicate me, because that'd be cool as hell. That is, like, I mean, the only thing that'd be better than that is having a fatwa against you, really, in order of.
Nobody knows how to have fun like a lapsed Catholic, apparently. You enjoy right. the guilt so much more, apparently.
Surely, you know, like, what, really? Or I thought the guilt would leave you if you lapsed.
Oh,
it yeah, but it's
you,
not, there's
but
no guilt, is it?
It?
That's why you enjoy it more. Because there is no guilt at that point. You've had guilt all the way through.
Oh, fair enough. Okay, sorry. My bad.
Mad. But yeah, it's still, it's a Catholic, it's Catholic flavour book called Quest for the Living God, but it was written with other people in mind, not just Catholics, so that everybody can appreciate certain things about the Catholic faith. And
that was nice.
Of course,
it?
They examined it and said, "No, we didn't get it quite right. We didn't want that. Didn't mean that." Yeah, that's a quote. I'm not telling you how it was spelled.
Straight from Benny himself, is it? Okay.
It's a very small story, I know, but
no, it's very interesting.
I know, it's such a remarkable thing, isn't it?
There is actually another Catholic story that I have, but we'll probably get to that later. Have you found anything yet, Steve, or shall I go on?
Hey, come on now, that's harsh. I don't appreciate that at all.
Alright, sorry.
Well, there's been big stuff this week from the Church of England.
Well, today, sure, yeah.
Well, do you want to do that one then?
No, it's fine. You carry on. I don't know. You know,
well, no, it's not on my list. So I'm going to do something, and then either you've read it or Trev will do it.
No, I've read the article earlier today in a couple of different formats, and obviously the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, has basically said that the government has no mandate to make the wild and rash changes that they are making. And basically just launches a bit of an assault all round on the current performance of the condemn government.
Whoa, you've gone over to the, you know...
No, I just... excuse me. Just for me, the Liberals aren't tempering the Tories as much as they probably should be.
No, no, sure. I just thought you'd call it the coalition rather than something that's right-wing rags.
I've got to get in there. The left-wing rant, not right-wing.
Okay.
No, so, yeah, basically, that's what it is. He's criticised the government, which I think it's perfectly reasonable to do. He's questioned that the cuts that they're making are going to increase child poverty and make things more difficult, which I think probably is actually quite right. So, yeah, he basically picked a fight with the government. Good on him. Would he be beheaded in his own cathedral, though? I don't know.
I read some of the stuff he said, and he seemed to make a bit of sense, to be fair.
Yeah, I thought so.
You know, I'm not going to just beat up on him. The only thing I want to add before Trev has his little bit is at the end of the article I read on the BBC, they tacked on something by Lord Sachs.
Oh, I didn't see that bit.
Yeah, that was the bit that got me.
What did Lord Sachs have
to say? Lord Sachs says, well, what we need to do, right, is all this, you know, big society and all that. No, we just need everyone to find religion, because that way everyone's going to get on better.
But in all fairness, that wasn't the Archbishop saying that.
No, it was Sachs. You know, but that, you know, as I said, I agreed with the Archbishop and a lot of the things
he said.
I've
got a direct quote from him. He says, "The evidence shows that religious people, defined by regular attendance at a place of worship, actually do make better neighbours. Conveniently deciding not to take any evidence from Israel, for example."
Yeah, that's convenient.
What a bag of shite. So how do you guys feel about Rowan Williams having done this?
I think it's great. I have no issue at all. I mean, you know, I don't have any problem with him. He's entitled to make a comment on the government like anyone else is. So I don't see why there's any problem with him having that comment, to be honest with you. I say fair play to him. And I think he's probably, you know, just voiced what a lot of people are actually feeling.
I think as well that he would have probably maybe wanted to go on a little bit further. But, and I've been reading up on him lately, before he became Archbishop, he was actually quite liberal.
Yeah.
In his views, and he wrote a very interesting essay, I think, which was
as Archbishop, he's very liberal.
Yeah, very towards homosexuality in the church, and he's very liberal, and so there was a bit of hope in me when he became Archbishop. However, he suddenly found that if you're Archbishop, you don't really have the voice you may have had before.
No, he's manacled.
You then become the mouth of the church.
Yes.
So he's kind of... What's the word?
Well, the problem he's got is that... He is a liberal person. He can be liberal by himself. As Archbishop of Canterbury, he's head of a worldwide church, which includes some very conservative opinions. And as we found out, more particularly with the church's stance on homosexuality, if he comes out and says anything, he instantly has threats of schism from those conservative churches. So, you know, he is very much now tempered in what he says, because he will get slated for it by his own church.
Trev, let's bring you in here.
Okay, well, this is very tricky for me.
Why?
Well, I agree with almost everything the man said. And he was asked about his friendship with Tony Blair. And it seems like he was all in favour of Labour coming more to the centre, but he doesn't like the fact that the Conservatives seem to see that as an indication that the nation wanted everyone to shift slightly to the right. No.
Yeah.
Slightly to the centre. And he's desperate to try and get that point across. But he did this in a piece as a guest editor, I think, in the New Statesman. And
that's correct.
Got that because he's the head of the Church of England. He wasn't doing it just as Rowan Williams. He got that because of his position. He's doing it as a religious spokesperson. So he's speaking with some divine authority there. He's guiding a flock. So even though I agree with the sentiments, I don't think he should have said them. There was a fellow who was interviewed on Sky News today. I didn't catch his name, which is a damn shame. He seemed even more left-wing and something of an activist. He was suspicious of the government and critical of almost every policy. And he made lots of sense. But the guy said, why shouldn't religious leaders weigh in on politics? As though there was no problem. And nobody gave an answer to his question because, like I said, it was Sky News.
Well, you know, I see. I gotta be honest with you, Trevor. I don't have a problem with him making comments. And okay, yes, I am an Anglican, and you know, what have you. But in actual fact, I don't see an issue with him having a comment on the way the government's run. After all, everyone seems to have a comment on the way the church is run. So I don't particularly have an issue.
No, I think what Trev's getting at is the idea that if it's if they've got like tax exempt status, and you know, they're a state institution at the end of the day, mm-hmm. there's this kind of idea that they're meant to be non-partisan. Is that where you were going with this, Trev, or am I just way
actually
off base?
No, that is a very valid one, but it's that
but again, I don't agree with that point either. I don't see.
So what, so you think that the church could back Labour or something like that?
No, I don't see why they couldn't. I mean, look, at the end of this.
Well, no, I
no,
do.
No,
if
no,
they're getting
no,
funding
no, no,
from
no,
the state,
no,
I see a problem with that.
I disagree entirely with that. I think, you know, there's no reason why they can't have a voice. And you know, speak out. At the end of the day, you know, if we had a fascist government, I would expect the church to speak out against it, even if they were being funded by that government.
No, but no. That, so I'm just talking about non-partisan. I'm talking about Labour. You know, picking a political party. I'm talking about.
Yeah, they haven't picked a political party.
No, no.
Just
but I'm just asking about that.
I just think that they have every right. And I don't have an issue with them coming out and making a comment and passing comment about the government's policies. After all, every other man his dog does. Yeah. So why shouldn't they also be allowed to do it and criticise them if they feel the government's doing a bad job?
What is your point then, Trev?
It's because of his position. And because he wrote that column as part of his position as the head of the Church of England. And either you believe in the religion or you don't. I'm guessing he does. And if you do believe and you want to be a priest or a vicar and a bishop, then you've got to remember that the authority that you carry comes from God. You shouldn't abuse that authority to drag your flock along on your own political beliefs. If you don't believe, we don't believe enough to be a priest
but
or a bishop.
I disagree with you there, Trev. I absolutely disagree with you. I think he's not trying to persuade people over his beliefs. He's passing comment on the government and how they're performing. I mean, his comment is that which I think is a very salient point, is with remarkable speed, we're being committed to radical long-term policies for which no one voted, which I think is a very fair point, because what is coming out from the government at the moment, for instance, the NHS reforms, was in no one's manifesto.
That's true.
Yeah, it's there on the table. So why isn't he able to come out and say that? That's not telling his flock to go out and not vote Tory or not vote Liberal. That's passing a comment on the performance of the government.
Oh, now come on, he's the head of the church. He's got an actual flock who will listen to what he says. The Queen isn't allowed to be partisan. She isn't allowed to say anything because of her like entrenched position.
I haven't heard
as
the Queen criticise the government.
Yeah, but the head of Lloyds Bank or the head of wherever could come out and say, go and vote for Tory or go and vote for Labour.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? They're in a position
where
they're...
But God isn't telling the people who work for that bank to obey.
Yeah, but the Archbishop hasn't said, God has said to me, this government is wrong.
No, that's true.
He's not making that statement. He's come out and said, I think this is what's wrong.
I don't know, question. Is
that... He's not at any point, for example, you know... Like the Pope would do, would come out and say, I'm making an infallible statement. He's not said that. He's been asked to pass a comment on the current state of the government. He's passed a comment on that. But he hasn't said, as Archbishop, God has told me that this government is wrong.
The problem, the way I see it, and I don't know, I'm kind of like in between you both, actually, is what you brought up there, Trev, about him saying about... he was commenting on how did the government have the mandate to do this. Now, for me, that is a political statement, mm-hmm. talking about mandate and things like that. Now, for instance, say we had a government who was committing genocide, okay? I think, yeah, sure, we are all within our rights to do that, and even he is, because that is a comment on, that's like a value statement.
Yeah.
Okay? But I just think that perhaps by making a statement, a purely political statement... I think he may be... I don't actually think in this country there is a partisan problem. In the States, there would be. There'd be a massive problem,
mm-hmm.
if a church went out and made a statement like he did.
Well, they do all the time, don't they?
Yeah, they do, and no one ever brings them to it, but they're not meant to. But I don't know if it's the same in this country. But I just think If it's a purely political statement, I think he may be, for me, that'd be falling foul of this partisan
Bearing in mind, he's writing in a secular magazine. He's not writing in a religious magazine.
He's not writing or addressing his
people, his flock, as you say, directly. It's not as if it's gone out in a Church of England publication. It's gone out in a national journal.
Yeah, but he only got that because...
A political journal.
If he was going to be stating personal political views, he should... expressly say that these are not my views as the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yeah.
But he was saying we should all be looking after each other and caring for each other, which is a wonderful religious comment. But, I agree with everything the guy says in that piece, but he shouldn't be doing it with his Archbishop hat on.
I've always undergone
the Catholic Church, but they ordered celebration of Hitler's birthday in Central Europe.
Yeah,
and everybody had to do it.
Yeah, and that's absolutely wrong. But that's my point is that, you know, if you're saying he can't, as Archbishop, he can't stand up and say this is wrong. If we were in that situation where, you know, that the Catholic Church at that time came out and said, actually, we oppose Hitler and we're not going to celebrate Hitler's birthday and we want you all not to go there, would you be saying he's not allowed to say that? Because that would be abusing his position as...
Well, no. As I said, I made a distinction. I'm saying if there's a genocide or something crazy going on, they're allowed to say it.
Likewise, even with this now, Rowan Williams is coming at this from a point of view of... Obviously, he's looking at social responsibility, equal, you know, justice, etc., 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 and he's passing comment on that, saying he doesn't think what the government is doing is fair. I don't think, reading this myself, it's come out, it's in the New Statesman, it's not in a church publication. I take Trev's point on board that he's only got to do that guest editorial because he's head of the church, which I totally understand, that's a fair point. But I do not think that should preclude him from passing comment where something is wrong within the government. I don't have an issue with that at all.
I've not read the thing directly from the New Statesman. I haven't bought it and read it. But I've read a bunch of reports about it. And if there was a demarcation, I mean, he could say at the beginning that I think this particular policy is un-Christian and this particular one reflects badly on what should be a Christian society, then these are all valid points for the head of the Church of England to make. And if he then says, on a personal level only, I also think this, to then talk about a mandate and about democracy and how he thinks that should work, that's got nothing to do with the Archbishop of Canterbury. That's not his business.
Yeah, but as a citizen, is he not allowed to pass comment on that? We pass comment on it every week.
He is, but... As
so should he? Should
John
he
Dixon
have his
found
freedom
out,
of speech?
You've got
to
be very careful about how you what yeah, and you wear when and you actually, say something.
But should he have his freedom of speech then restricted because he's Archbishop of Canterbury?
Right. Okay. Can I just interject something here? Right. Okay. Because I remember the John Dixon story, and you seem to think that there may have been a case against him.
I said because he was bringing the council into disrepute.
Right. Okay.
Because the council is very clear on its guidelines. That was my point. I said he was fine to say what he had to say. And I also said at the time the issue
was
all
to do with his official
that it
capacity.
It came from the Twitter account Councillor John Dixon. And I said from the point of view of the council, they have a responsibility to look into the standards and ethics because that's what they have to do.
But this came from the New Statesman's account of the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yeah, but it's from the New Statesman. It's not a Church of England publication.
But he still had the hat on. That's
I think it's a
that's
different
like saying
thing.
It depends which phone he typed the tweet on.
No, I disagree. I think that's a completely different thing, to be honest with you.
All I'm saying is, with official hats, both of those stories are kind of the same. All the context of the Dixon one were
but the,
a personal
the point
thing.
Is, in this story, we're even saying we agree with the Archbishop. We're just saying we don't agree with his right to say it.
Yeah, well, we're yeah. really
that,
picky
that's
like
what
that.
I'm saying. We are saying, you know, proponents of free speech here, he doesn't have the right to free speech. He
no,
doesn't have the right
no,
to come out and say
as
it.
Long as,
he does
as long
have
as he
right
makes clear that he puts, changes hats.
No, well, again, I think that's nonsense, to be honest with you. I think that's absolutely nonsense.
I'm actually kind of in the middle, but
like I said, this is again, it's not from the New Statesman. It is from actually from the Daily Mail, but it is quoted from the New Statesman, and it's what the Archbishop said, which was what I've already quoted, which is with remarkable speed we are being committed to radical long-term policies for which no one voted, which isn't saying that the government doesn't have a mandate. He's clearly pointing out there that actually we've got policies coming through, which was in nobody's manifesto, which we're aware of.
No, sure, but that is a very political statement.
And then he
says,
at the very least, there's understandable anxiety about what democracy means in such a context. And he's criticised the big society. I really don't understand why that is a problem for him to be making those comments to the Archbishop. I don't see why it's a problem for him making those comments at all. He is not there. He's not in a pulpit in the Church of England making those comments as a sermon. He is not in a Church of England publication making those comments. He's in a secular publication making those comments. And yes, he is only in that position because of his position in the Church of England. I accept that, Trev. But I don't accept the fact that he needs to say, I'm not Archbishop of Canterbury at the moment. I'm saying this as Rowan Williams. That's nonsense.
It's not. The reason why I believe it isn't nonsense is because it's because of the fact that he would have got that editorial position because of his position in the church, and he got his position in the church. That authority is divine, and that gives him an amount of power over people, which he has to be very clear to set aside when he's making personal political statements.
So, all right, okay. So, hang on a second. So, I'm saying is just to be clear now, okay, right? Because I was just talking about like a legality, and I think technically he's legal within this country because we're not like the states, okay?
Yeah, no,
I think Trev's just talking.
You can't do that.
Yeah. I think Trev's just making a kind of moralistic argument, saying that he's got a responsibility, and that he may be like kind of abusing his power in making very political statements, and they are quite political because he mentions big society.
Yes, they are political statements, yeah. But I don't see why he shouldn't be allowed to make political comments. I don't understand why that is the case at all. I think that's perfectly reasonable.
He is allowed. But
No. We're not saying
he's
illegal.
Saying is he's not allowed to, unless he specifically says, I'm saying this as Rowan Williams, not as the Archbishop of Canterbury.
No, we're not saying he's not allowed, as in he should be stopped. But we're just querying the ethical nature of, you know, with that much, not control or power, but with the ears of so many people.
I'm a member of his flock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I'm not influenced by what he's written in this article. I already agreed with that anyway.
Okay, yeah. But some people
I've not
been
influenced by that. There's plenty of people within the Church of England who are ultra-right conservatives who are not going to be influenced by what he's written there.
Yeah.
I think you're subscribing too much power to him, to be honest with you.
No, I know he doesn't have much power, but...
It doesn't matter if it doesn't actually affect any one person. The point is that because it might, he should have more respect for the new type of pulpit that he's been given. Anyone can rant and try and change people's minds, and I think it's great. And for what the man said, if I met him down a pub, I'd offer to buy him a pint. I think it's great. But I believe he should have...
But don't you think that's what the new statesman? Don't you think that's what the new statesman employed him for to do anyway? The new statesman have made him guest editor. Okay, admittedly because of his position, but to make such comments.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm sure there's all two.
That's exactly why he's been employed by them to do it.
Mm. I don't think I necessarily have a major problem with it. It's just a little unnerving for seeing somebody in such a senior position making what is a very political statement. I mean, other religious figures have made statements about the current government, but you kind of generalise. You say all murder is, or, you know, all murder against other races is wrong, you know, in the acts of genocide. But that's not really, like, that's not the same as attacking a policy, I find that, and that's
but
where
like
the line
is. But like I said,
if
it's bad policy, why is that a problem?
Yeah, I mean,
we all agree that, you know, it's bad policy, and we agree with the sentiments of what you're saying.
Yeah, and kind of going back to the John Dixon thing, you know, I thought it was kind of ridiculous, even if John Dixon was saying something in a
professional
proper
context, yeah.
Capacity.
Should we briefly mention the points about John Dixon, just in case anybody isn't aware of it?
Yeah, go for it, mate.
The Cardiff councillor who has a tweet account that mentions his name as Councillor John Dixon, but only because there was already a John Dixon and he needed a tweet account. That's the reason why I give him a pass on this one. And he was walking through London and tweeted, I just passed a Scientology church, better hurry in case the stupid rubs off. And they tried to sue him on that one.
Yeah. But I'm just wondering
about speech and whether you're doing it as a councillor and who you're representing. When you say stuff.
But at the end of the day, my point was that at the end of the day, how can you have a problem with somebody saying the truth in whatever capacity? And yeah. Let's be honest, I don't know anyone with half a brain who doesn't think what he said was true.
Yeah.
And so how can it would be really what kind of a weird world would it be whether someone got sacked or reprimanded for just saying something that was what I would consider objectively true? And this is opening a whole can of worms.
Yeah.
So
I'm very stubborn about holding to the principle of something. Like I believe that people should have a freedom of speech in this country, even to say dreadful, appalling things that I don't agree with.
Yeah, same here.
And if somebody is not in a position to say something, even if they say something that I thoroughly agree with, as in this case, I don't think he should be free to do it without at least adding something along the lines of, I'm not pushing this as some kind of doctrine or encouraging the flock to follow me.
Okay, I think it was just basically how we viewed it. I just, as I said, Trev's was kind of thinking that he should have taken more responsibility. You're quite happy that he's saying something positive, and I'm thinking, I agree with everything he said.
I'm quite happy that you've got a public figure challenging the government, because one is at the moment, really. No. The government are riding roughshod over the country, yeah. And nobody's saying jack all to
it. And if anything, I think this story's interesting. It's interesting to see this kind of friction happening. As I said, the only thing that I found slightly unnerving was a religious figure making political, very political, not just a comment or a general comment on stuff, but very specific statements. And I just thought about constitutional things.
I wonder if he's going to be able to actually corral the bishops in the House of Lords to block enough of these things going through.
Well, the thing is, Trev, this is the whole point. I blogged about this after Leo and Harry's rant about it in the Independent a couple of weeks ago. I think that I can't try and remember the figures now. I think there's something like 29 lords out of 365.
Yeah, but
so 18 bishops, isn't it?
Yeah, 18 bishops. They can't block anything.
But that's working on the proviso that they always turn up to all the votes.
Yeah,
they have a staggeringly low turnout.
But you know, that's assuming all the bishops turn up as well. Because they don't turn up to every meeting in the House of Lords.
But the point is, in this, if he feels that strongly, he could encourage them to do so. And while I think that would be wonderful for crippling the horrendous policies that are going to be pushed through, I think, constitutionally speaking, it would be horribly wrong, and I would still...
Yeah, but again, I think on something as large as that, you're going to have a lot of Lords in the House, because obviously the Conservatives are going to get all their peers out to vote it through, and Labour are going to get all their peers out to try and block it. So there's going to be whips galore everywhere to get them into the House of Lords to actually vote on it. Again, the 18 bishops are going to have no impact on that at all, because guaranteed... guaranteed some of those bishops don't agree with Rowan Williams and they agree with David Cameron. Because there's that right-wing element within the church, sadly. So I think it's not me having to go at you, Trev. I just think that the criticism of saying, oh, you know, the bishops in the House of Lords can say this and that. The bishops in the House of Lords have no power at all.
Oh no, but the point isn't what might they be able
I agree
to do.
With you.
It's why should they be there at all.
No, I agree with that. You know, if you read my blog, you'll see I actually agree with that. Right. I don't agree with them being there purely because they're bishops. I don't agree with that point at all. But I think, you know, to try and say they've got this block vote is crazy when you've got the political vote already in there. When each government gets elected, they put a load of their own lords in so they can win control of the lords. Which is why there's such a ridiculously large number of lords. I mean, obviously, and I know you'll agree with me on this, there's only one way to resolve that, and that's to have an elected upper house.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I know that you and I will both agree on that in its entirety.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the thing is, people will make complaints about things that could happen if the bishops wanted to do dreadful things and ban discussion of certain topics. And, okay, it's never really going to happen, but how can you make people cross enough so that the government will actually think about reform and do it properly?
I mean, there's a lot of cross people about, you know, electoral reform, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But, I mean, I've got to say, in all fairness to, you know, this is one thing where I think the Liberals have really put, and they had to really, follow in the whole AV debacle, but the NHS reforms. Clearly, they've tempered the government over those reforms, and I think that's brilliant. They need to do it more often.
Well, they basically are just going to try and be a thorn in the side of the Conservatives now until the next election, hoping that that will win them some votes. I mean,
but then you've still got people like Vincent coming out saying, you know, the cuts have got to happen, support the government, don't go on a strike.
It is interesting.
Which is very disappointing to have that from Vince Cable.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, talking about what the government are up to at the moment, with the way Cameron is desperately trying to make it seem like he never really wanted to go through with that anyway. Well, we're actually still talking about it, and we wanted to be talking about it for a bit longer. That's fine.
Oh, that winds the hell up out of me. It pisses me right off.
Well, you can see he's changing his mind, but making it sound like, I always intended to do that. I know I always spoke about a period of listening. Yeah, and it seems like he's just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. But actually rearranging the Mars bars in the vending machine in the lobby of the Fukushima nuclear plant. Is what I think he's doing. Because it's more desperate, it's more pointless, and it's just going to be dangerous irradiated brown stuff at the end of it. But yeah, one thing that the Tories have been saying is good is that Osborne and his financial plans have been approved and endorsed by the IMF.
What?
The financial siege engine that pillages the poor of the world to keep the oil pumping. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. They're really renowned for their ethical investments, aren't they?
Yeah, the ones who said... So, Dominic Strauss-Kahn, he's done what? Oh, he back in work on Monday?
Yeah.
All right, Mark guys, Steele, it's time for a rant.
Mark Steele...
Trev, on the rant right now. Let him go.
Okay, sorry, Ken.
He said Osborne may as well be endorsed by Gary Glitter.
Ooh, you see? As soon as you do a comparison to Gary Glitter, you're going to, you know...
I was quoting, though. That wasn't me going ad Hitlerian.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah, it was a very effective quote, definitely. Okay, I got a story that I wanted to talk about, and it's been really pissing me off all week, so I thought, what better than to rant about it on the podcast?
Great.
We've heard of David Tredenick, MP, haven't we?
Yeah.
Please remind me.
Well, were close the other week when I mentioned Nadine Dorries. You were like, well, was she the one that said that? He's the one that said... that people's blood doesn't clot on a full moon. That's why no one operates on a full moon, yeah? So, just to give you a bit of background, he's a Conservative MP, believe it or not, yeah? He's the MP for Bosworth, and basically he believes in loads of nonsense, like complementary therapies, alternative medicine, and all that kind of guff. Now, this week he tweeted something... which a lot of people just looked at and then mocked him directly on Twitter for, but I actually went and did a bit more digging. He put, one in the eye for the skeptics as Princess Alexandra Hospital NHS Trust seeks staff to provide a Reiki cancer care consultant, okay? So what's happened is, and I'm just going to pop over to the website now, on NHS Jobs... That's jobs.nhs.uk. Basically, there's a vacancy for a Reiki therapist. Okay.
I thought assisted suicide was illegal in the UK.
Well, we may wish it wasn't. But, I take your point, because this is crazy now. So you've got cancer people. Now, obviously, they're trying to sell it as Reiki alongside conventional therapy. Yeah. That's how they're trying to sell it. Okay?
Oh, that's how they're sidestepping the cancer laws.
Well, so they're looking for a Reiki therapist. As an experienced Reiki master, you will be working within cancer care. The Reiki practitioner will be responsible for giving Reiki treatments to patients, carers, and members of staff within the breast unit. The post holder will be a member of the multidisciplinary... honk, honk. No. No. Not that kind of breast unit. The post holder will be a member of the multidisciplinary breast team. The post is funded by the Sam Buxton Sunflower Trust charity. So I'm thinking, so right, okay, so this isn't coming
so
out
of... So it's not government funding.
It's not government funding. It's coming from a charity. So I thought, who is this charity? Okay. Now, this is where the story gets slightly sadder in both terms of the word, okay? Now, Sam Buxton was a young boy who, age 10, died of cancer. Okay? And he was diagnosed terminal. And so for those last months of his life... you know, he was receiving conventional therapy, chemotherapy, radiotherapy for his leukemia. But at the same time as him receiving this,
conventional treatment.
Conventional treatment, he also was given Reiki treatment, which his parents say that without it, he wouldn't have had an active, vibrant, and cheerful life. He'd have just been in a bed suffering. You know, it was the Reiki that made him happy and smiley. So, I have an issue with this, okay? So, basically, these people, this family, you know, who have lost a son. So, mm-hmm. obviously, you know...
It's tragic and it's...
Yeah, my thoughts are with them. Unfortunately, they've been misguided now. So, they're going around telling people that they want to raise money to help treat cancer people. Oh, geez. And taking money off them, yeah? But their money isn't going to a cancer charity or to a cancer ward or anything like that. It's going to providing Reiki healers in hospitals, okay? Now, this is my rant. If there was ever, okay, an instance where you can see that this fucking... this woo, this nonsense causes harm, it's here. You've got people with money. They want to help cancer sufferers. It's not going where it needs to go. It's going into the pockets of nonsense peddlers. And whether or not these people know it's nonsense or not, because I'm sure there's a lot of homeopaths out there who actually do believe it works, you know, I think it's irrelevant. It's a waste of money.
I think, John, I totally agree with you.
It's sad.
It is very sad. I think it's very, very sad. And it's sad, as you say, on both counts. It's sad for the family. And it's sad for cancer treatment. But any cancer treatment that is approved in this country has to be subjected, and I mean medical real treatment now, has to be subjected to numerous and significant tests to prove its efficacy.
Efficacy, yeah.
What tests have been done, scientific medical tests, to prove the efficacy of Reiki?
But they're getting by by calling it complementary, aren't they? That it's not replacing any.
Yeah, but that's my point. Yeah, you know, it's maybe complementary, but still, it's being paid for. It's diverting money from genuine cancer treatment. So, you know, maybe we might have a massive surprise. They'll run a medical test, and maybe it does make people more happy and help them out. But, you know, let's see the... I doubt it, obviously. But let's actually see the proof.
No, sure. Totally. And it just annoys me because I imagine you could be in a pub one night and this, you know, a jar comes around, you know, a couple of quid. Oh, what's it for? Oh, cancer, you know, and all that. You know, you're going to chuck your cash in it, aren't you?
Yeah.
And when someone says, oh, that woman over there, her son died of cancer, she's collecting for it.
Oh, definitely,
you know,
have some cash.
Have some cash. But, you know, because they're just going to say, oh, it's for cancer, to make people better, you know, and then to find out, you know, that it's for nonsense such as this, it really breaks my heart.
Yeah.
It's like that. Was it Save Laura? Is the name of the. There's some poor woman called Laura who's got a husband and a kid, and she's got terminal cancer. And there's they're trying to raise enough money to send her to America to go to a complete fraud who's been banned from doing certain things because there's no evidence for it. And he's. Managed to get around it by saying he's conducting clinical trials, even though he's been doing it for nearly 20 years now. And they've managed to save a shed load of money, which would be a great thing to leave for her family, rather than waste on something like 50 grand or more, so that she goes over to America and has some Fruit Loop, you know, feel her skull or whatever nonsense it is he's going to do. Oh, that was the thing.
And the problem is,
he got their urine and managed to take some cells out of it and inject them back into them. It's absolute nonsense. And
this is like, but this will be sold to people. Yeah, this will be sold to people as, well, they've got this therapy. It's not available in the UK. because blah, 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 blah. So we've got to go to the States for this special therapy. So people are like going, oh, yeah, we'll definitely give money for that.
Yeah.
But they're not realizing the reason it's not available in this country is because it's absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that pisses me off. And thanks for reminding me of that story, Trev, because that kind of happened last week or whatever, you know, before, and we didn't squeeze it in. But that annoys the hell out of me. It really does.
But that does also segue quite nicely into another little story which has come out this week, which is, I don't know if you've followed it on Twitter, about the Alice bucket list.
Yes.
Which I think is quite an interesting one. Young girl, obviously, terminal with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I think it is, or Hodgkin's lymphoma, I'm not sure which it is, I get confused. But she's terminal and sadly is dying, so she's obviously created her own bucket list, which she's tried to get trending on Twitter, and actually at one point yesterday it was the third most trending topic in the world, not just in the UK. So that's pretty fantastic. And, you know, the key point which she wants off her bucket list is for everyone who can be to be a bone marrow donor. So, you know, I think that's really important, just worth a mention, really, that, you know, there's someone there who's obviously not very well and sadly is dying, but, you know, they're looking to the future for other people and trying to secure more bone marrow donors, which is something which actually does help people who are ill.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, that's definitely good, and I will get onto that tonight. Because, like, if I was a young teenager, you know, who was dying, you know, I'd probably start a Twitter trend as well. Something like, you know, have John's virginity or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, she's got other stuff on that you'd expect from a teenager, like, you know, wanting to have a photo shoot with her friends and wanting to go and see Take That and all this sort of stuff. But, you know, her number one priority is the getting people on the bone marrow list.
Yeah. Well, mine would be getting my cock in something.
Thanks, John.
That's okay.
Excellent.
Trev.
Hi.
Are you...
I've got another story I'd love to tell you guys about. Psychic tip-off sparks police hunt for mass grave in Texas.
I did. Yes. I saw the headline, didn't look into it anymore.
I had this, and I tell you what, it beats me up. Cause I've been very busy today, and I saw this story, but I haven't read it, and I was like, so I couldn't put it on my list, but tell us about it, mate. Tell us about it.
Woman faces false reporting charges after police and FBI search a rural home, and the search was beamed live on national TV, and it ends in red faces.
Oops.
There was an anonymous tip reportedly from a psychic that multiple dismembered bodies were buried at a house. Police later confirmed there were no bodies. This is my favourite sentence. Police in Texas are investigating whether a tip-off from a woman claiming to be a psychic that sparked a hunt for a mass grave of dismembered bodies, including children, was a hoax. Of course it was a bloody hoax! She said she was psychic! It's mental. I don't want to say too much about it, because the house that she sent them to, the two people who live there say they think they know which woman it was and why she did it. So it might turn into a criminal case for other reasons, but the deal is, if the police get a tip off from anyone, they have to investigate if it's about something that could be as serious as a murder, and they could say, oh, I just had a dream and I think there's a body somewhere. They'll send someone to go and check, because the person could be lying. They might be saying that they're a psychic, but actually they committed the murder, and they're trying to lead the police in a different direction. You can't just ignore stuff every time the word psychic comes up. The police are impelled to investigate this kind of thing, but the press are treating it like this woman might not be a real psychic, like off of the telly. We think she might be faking. Oh, she's faking.
That is the annoying thing about it. Instead of treating this...
But you know what? There's one good thing to come out of that, though, isn't there? The fact that it was done on live television and proved to be bunkum.
No, but that's what I mean. But as soon as that happens, they start explaining it away as she's a fake psychic. Instead of saying, of all these hits that we see, the publicised ones, let's publicise this mess. But that's not happening, see? It's the no true psychic fallacy.
Yeah.
Hey, have I just coined a phrase? But yeah, that's that really annoys me that it's been painted as, well, she's obviously not a real psychic, otherwise she'd have got it right. And I'm like going, hello, circular logic. Yeah, that annoyed me. But so I hope she gets, well, I don't know. I hope that she gets some medical, like, psychiatric treatment, because she obviously believes that she has some powers that she obviously doesn't.
Or she was just malicious, lying about the couple.
Yeah, I mean, if that is the case, then she needs to go to prison. Yeah. There's no two bones about it. So, yeah, definitely.
Okay, there's another story that I wanted to ask you guys opinion about. And that's the Uberversity that A.C. Grayling and a bunch of others are cooking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Damn you, it's on my list! I was about to go into that story.
Oh, okay. The private university.
I've only really got my my questions that I want to ask about it. So you shoot the story, go for it.
Okay, well, I was just going to talk about... everybody seems to be jumping on it with hate.
Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of hate on this. There's a lot of hate on it. Now, my problem with this is, I'm not trying to jump on any particular side, is for me, this university... is not the problem. This is like the symptoms for me. And so, you know, for people like Grayling and Dawkins and whoever's going to go and lecture at this, you know, they're normal people. They want to make a couple of quid. So, you know, this cushy job thing, you know, how can you blame them for doing it? My problem is that our country's university system is so screwed over that this kind of thing is going to fly. In other words, that university is so screwed up that this is actually a good idea. Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable, people think, isn't it? Private university.
Yeah, this is inevitable. This is bound to happen with what's happened. So therefore, I don't think that we should be saying A.C. Grayling is a cock and that he's, you know, some elitist liberal git who's going to take loads of money off rich people and he doesn't care about the working class person. Hey, he's a professional. He's got a job. He's got a day job. He's going to do it. The problem, you know, we need to be shouting at the government.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So...
That's right. It's not A.C. Grayling's fault that the current education system is being dismantled. And it looks like private universities are going to be part, or at least, of the replacement.
Yeah.
And I think the sceptical leading lights involved have anticipated this and are preparing this to influence the shape of higher education in the future for what it's going to become. And our critical thinking and scientific literacy are key to their proposals. Okay, mm-hmm. Maybe only toffs can afford it first time around, but I'd much rather the next generation of chinless, guffawing parasites can identify a logical fallacy. They'll all have to learn about evolution as well, and therefore also the importance of genetic diversity, and then cancel the wedding between Giles and Bunty, the first cousins that want to inherit the mansion. And I want this to be so successful that an overview of evidential critical logical thinking becomes the minimum a person gets from a university-level education.
Mm-hmm.
That can only be a good thing. There's lecturers now having a piss fit because they weren't invited, by the sound of it, professing nothing but their lack of understanding of the difference between scientific literacy, which a rigorous philosophy of science course will give you, and scientific proficiency, which is what they're actually talking about. And some of the most celebrated scientists are trying to show the extent of the value of humanities subjects, including their limits. And that's a great thing. But supposed intellectuals are falling back onto their old prejudices, going, there's my subject. My subject's better than his subject. He didn't include this or that. Why didn't I get a Channel 4 documentary series? Please, can I be on
the thing is, though, Trev, you've hit the nail on the head there, because the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, those subjects get funding. Science research gets funding.
Not enough, but
it gets funding. Whereas humanities, what funding they had...
It was the first thing to be chopped.
...is now gone.
Yeah.
So, do you know what? I would love to be able to afford to go to it, because I would love to be taught by those people. However, I have to be fundamentally opposed to it, because I believe in free education.
Mm.
And I believe that education is a right, not a privilege. And unfortunately, by having to pay 18 grand a year to go there, that wealth of learning, that wealth of knowledge, that wellspring to tap into is actually only going to go to the toffs who at the end of the day are going to end up working in daddy's bank, ripping us all off and shafting us sideways.
Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, they've said it's going to be 80% toffs and 20% poor people. Yeah.
I mean, I would much rather have seen it set up as a philanthropic enterprise and them not charge anyone for going there and just take the brightest minds.
But that's the criticism that's been levelled against them, is why aren't they just opening this to everybody? Well, obviously it doesn't make business sense. They've already worked that out. Yeah. Otherwise they wouldn't be doing it.
I can't criticise them for that, in so much as they need to make money so they can pay themselves and do that. Absolutely. But Trev's point that actually, do you know what? This should be... Well, I think this is what you're saying, Trev, anyway. So if I'm putting words in your mouth, please tell me.
Sure.
So,
go ahead.
You know, this should be something which is provided by the government. And it shouldn't be a case that we've got individuals taking action to secure this type of learning in this country.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think that message has been completely missed by the media. They're just seeing this as this elitist university. They're not seeing this as, well, we need to open this university because the government's axed all of these programs from everywhere else. And also, what Trev was coming was and what I took away from it, is that, all right, so all the rich people are going to end up going here and they're going to be taught critical thinking, but those are the people that are going to end up being the politicians, and it may, hey, make this country a better place. So,
hopefully, but I mean,
well, it'll influence the rest of the system, whatever is thrown up to replace the university system we have now.
Absolutely, I agree with that. What I would like, and what I would like to see, is critical thinking taught in schools.
Yeah.
Is where I'd like to see it start. I'd like to see it start in comprehensive school. Well, you know, very basics taught in primary school, but then getting more depth taught in secondary school. And I think critical thinking should be part of, you know, they do these nonsense PHSE lessons where they learn bollocks. You know, go and actually learn how to think for yourselves.
And a bit of philosophy, I think, should be thrown in there.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think that plays a massive part in critical thinking.
Yeah, because there's an awful lot of scientists whose opinion I still respect, but they say philosophy like it's a bad word, not realising that they say that because they've got a good grasp of the philosophy of science. They happen to get that from their lecturers or their teachers. But there's plenty of scientists who will not get that, and they'll fall into logical error, which can cost shedloads of money, for one thing, and people go studying without putting proper controls in place, allow fallacies to ruin their work.
Okay, yeah. So
even if the bank balance is all you care about, you still need decent critical thinking.
Okay, how much time are you guys going to stay on this podcast? Because we're just over the hour now, and I want to know how long do you want to continue.
I've just got another 5 minutes.
Okay, we'll call it 5 minutes. Steve, have you got something really good or not? Is it good enough to take up 5 minutes of time, or are we going to? Because I've got a Catholic bashing story.
We've had one Catholic bashing story. This is a light-hearted story, which I'm quite happy, you know, not to go through. If Trev wanted to continue on with the university debate that we're having now,
well, we all agreed on it, so. Yeah. he was hoping that we were going to disagree.
Damn you, I agree more.
Or if you've got something more serious, you know.
I just mention that there's two new elements on the periodic table?
Well, that was one of the things I wanted to mention this week.
All right, do it.
Brilliant.
But, Trev can do that because Trev's mentioned it, so.
I just got a brief mention that the periodic table, an immutable product of scientific beauty, apparently, just got repainted. Actually, not repainted. It's more like if your favourite painting just had a couple of pretty key rings added on the bottom. I'm not complaining, but it's rocked my world pretty badly. Yeah. The first
and the thing is, there's
the
a long
table.
Queue. Yeah, there's a long queue to have your name now on an element. So, what are they called?
They're called
Unenquadium
and Unenhexium. Now they have. Only just.
No, but those names are, well, what I read anyway. And
temporary,
they're placeholders.
Right?
They're placeholders. And
my
they're
suggestion
actually,
for
one's
the first
named
words to be added
after
to
Moscow.
The periodic table should be, what the fuck, Ian? And are you kidding me, Ian?
Two. It's typical, isn't it? No new elements discovered for the last, 30 years? And then two of the fuckers come along at the same time.
But, you know, yeah. But I think what should be pointed out here, I think, as well, is that they're not natural occurring elements, because I don't know if people necessarily understand that. They're elements which have been created.
Well, half the periodic table aren't naturally occurring, are they?
No, but I'm not sure if people knew that, because I didn't really know that until I read the article earlier, to be honest with you. I mean, I knew that all the elements that I knew of in the periodic table were naturally occurring, but I didn't realise that some of the newer additions were just man-made, which I wasn't aware of. So I thought I'd share that.
Great story.
Show my ignorance. But yeah, it was. I think that's quite an exciting, you know, find for humanity, but there we go. My story is completely banal and just, you know, not on that level at all. And that is Donnie the dog, the saucy football mascot, gets her job back after a raunchy photo shoot that disgraced the club.
What?
Raunchy.
Mother of three, Tracy Chandler, who has been Doncaster Rovers' mascot for many years, Donnie the dog, posed for charity in the Sunday Sport or Daily Sport in lingerie with the mascot costume there. So she got fired from her job. And she's been reinstated.
Oh, thank God there was no bestiality in your story. I was really scared for a while.
I'll just point a picture here to John a second so you can see.
Hey, let's check that out. She's like...
She's
a bit of a MILF, isn't she?
Yeah. She's not too bad at all. And yeah, so she did these...
You can leave the dog head on tonight.
So she did the raunchy photos. And they were for charity. And yeah, as I say, the club felt that it was disgracing the club, so sacked her. But she's taken to the tribunal and has got her job back.
Do Doncaster have that much of a reputation that they need to be worried about being disgraced by a fit bird in a dog outfit?
Apparently they do. So there's another photo for John's pleasure.
Hey, I think we ought to thank you for providing this podcast photo. Fantastic.
I'm going to have to put a link to that. Oh, thanks very much.
Yeah, so I just wanted to bring that up. I see it's nonsense, but...
Okay, I'm going to wrap up the podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I just wanted to mention that this weekend I'm actually doing something that's slightly highbrow.
You have your eyebrows done?
I was going to read a book. But no, seriously, I'm actually going to be giving a talk at the Stickler Syndrome Conference in Daventry about genetic screening.
Mm.
So,
will you be publishing your talk on?
Well,
the blog?
I'll be probably creating the talk, the PowerPoint presentation. Yeah, I might put it on the blog. I don't know if it's going to be videoed. I don't know if we've got the resources. We'll see. But it might actually become a talk, as in a proper talk that I'm willing to do in other places. People who are interested in genetics and also, you know, family planning and stuff like that. So. That should be interesting. What about you guys? Have you got anything you want to plug?
Nice. You're gonna family it up for the audience there and science it up for the skeptics. Do it with us.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Great.
I have got something to plug, John, which is kind of almost totally irrelevant to what we do, but I said I would do it because a mate, my friend Guy and his colleague, are next year going to be running around Wales, 1,024 miles. It's the equivalent of 39 marathons, and they're going to be doing it in just over a month, and they're trying to raise £25,000 for Velindra Cancer Research. So if you would like to sponsor them...
We'll put a link on the blog.
We'll put a link on the blog, but it's dragonrun1027.co.uk.
Cool.
So please go and sponsor them.
Trey, have you got anything?
Brilliant. Yeah, this week I mowed the front lawn. next week, you know, I'm going to do the back lawn.
Maybe you want to read up on some history in between?
Well, yeah.
Anybody who wants to sponsor me.
Isn't Skeptics in the Pub this month on a Thursday?
It is, yeah.
It is. We're going to have to do this next Wednesday, aren't we?
So we're going to be doing the podcast. No, it's good for me. And is it good for you?
Nah, I could do.
Okay, well, we'll discuss that off air. But I will say this much, that it will, if the server's back up running and it's going out live, it'll be recorded but going out live. So in other words, you just catch it on iTunes, if that's more preferable. But yeah, there will be a podcast, but we just need to sort out when it is. Can you remember what Skeptics in the Pub is in Cardiff, Trev, so we can maybe plug that?
Oh yeah, it's John Ronson. It's in fact
John Ronson.
It's not just a John Ronson, it's the John Ronson.
John Ronson. As in men staring at goats and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you going to be there for that, Steve?
I'd love to be there for that, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so all three of us might be there for that, so awesome. Anyway, so we're going to wrap up. Thanks very much for people listening. Thanks to Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks for your member enhancement. Thanks to Trev.
Thank you.
For your member and enhancement.
And enhancement. And we'll catch you guys
which is helping my work no end.
You just keep going back there. Thanks very much for everyone listening. We'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.